ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of stuff. We didn't talk over the week about what happened over the weekend out in Phoenix with the waste management, or they're calling it now WM Open. I guess they don't want to say waste management. I don't understand. Anyhow, the WM Open out at Phoenix.
What a waste.
And everybody saw the craziness that occurred after the hole-in-one, especially on Saturday by Sam Ryder. And, of course, all the beverages thrown from the stands down on the course, down on the hole on number 16. Do you have a problem with that? Is it fun or is it craziness out at Phoenix? We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Super Bowl, we'll tie up some loose ends. Did anybody realize as the play happened? I know the broadcast crew didn't realize because they never even made mention of it. The Stafford no-look pass on the last drive of the Super Bowl, the game-winning drive of the Super Bowl. The only 15-plus play game-winning drive in Super Bowl history in the fourth quarter. You know that drive, the most important one of the season. And he's throwing no-look passes to Cooper Kupp. Nobody even realized it. It was so smooth. I'll talk there. Who gets the blame for Cincinnati's loss? You know, that because of the way the game was played, it feels like it was close, could have gone either way, and you almost, I don't know, it feels like there really hasn't been a lot of talk of who gets blame. You know, a lot of times after one of these games, it's like, oh my gosh, what a goat. You know what I mean? Like, in the bad way. I haven't really heard much of that, so we'll discuss that. Who gets the blame for Cincinnati's loss? Odds for the 2023 Super Bowl are out. Who would you make the favorite? Who could be next year's Bengals? And maybe even next year's Rams? Because as we talked about yesterday, all of a sudden, it feels like star quarterbacks moving is in vogue after the last 2 years with Brady and Stafford changing teams and winning Super Bowls. Elk City finished up the regular season last night down in Elgin. Talk a little bit about that. The Thunder win in overtime and MSG, and in the process, Josh Giddey is making history in his first year in the league. And we'll update you on where the Thunder sit in the tank standings as we near the All-Star break. Did you realize the All-Star game is this weekend?
No.
I didn't either. I had no idea, but it's the truth. The All-Star break is coming up this weekend with the All-Star. I have no idea where it's at. Any idea where it's at?
No, I just know where I'm going to be at this weekend. I have no idea where the NBA All-Star game is going to be at this weekend.
Yeah, me neither.
That has been way off my radar. So, for obvious reasons, right? Mainly because the city is tanking. But
it's in Cleveland.
Well, that's why nobody knows.
What a blast! Actually, you know what? I've heard Cleveland's kind of a cool city with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a bunch of different things. It's a pretty
Cleveland
cool place.
Rocks. Cleveland rocks.
Well, now.
There's a good song.
You're throwing in, that's your second pun already in the opening of the show. Way to go. You're on your game. You're a little bit more on your game today than you were yesterday, I'll say that.
Yeah. A little bit more sleep last night.
You almost look awake today.
Yeah.
As opposed to yesterday.
I'm more awake with less coffee today.
225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. In the world of sports, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. The app has all things Paragon with radio stations, Penny News, Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. And then, of course, we've got the Skinny on Sports podcast back online, baby. After yesterday, we've got it all revamped, so you can check out the Skinny on Sports podcast and probably have a handful or so to make up, to catch up with us to where we are now. Check that out on KADSAM.com or on iTunes. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Man, I am actually really fresh considering Elk City basketball went down to Elgin.
It's amazing what starting a game 30 minutes earlier will do.
It really is shocking. It was only 30 minutes. But, man, that makes a giant difference. And, by the way, the games were called loosely, let's say. Weren't a lot of free throw shot. Weren't a lot of dead. You know, it was just the games move along at a nice, brisk pace.
Yeah.
I don't even know if the total broadcast time last night was 3 hours, which that's a rarity for me. You guys maybe not so much, but for me, when you go on, you know, with the 15 minutes at the first that I try to get on, and then the way the games go, it seems like it's a lot longer game normally.
Yeah.
But not last night. As I was home, at like 5 after 11.
That's not bad.
That's awesome.
Coming all the way from
for an Elgin trip, yeah. That is awesome.
It's not bad.
Shout out to a negative shout out to one of the eating establishments there in that town. Closing at 9, eh? That's awesome. We have one right down the street here, too. Tuttle. Think Tuttle.
What are we talking about here? Tuttle.
Yeah, think Tuttle for the headquarters of the eating establishment I'm concerned with down in Elgin.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I was thinking of one of
It was
those.
On the edge of town as go out, trying to, you know, the
you
way I
grab like a burger
that's
on the
right.
road, get out of there, get some food in you.
And, of course, it's the last one. And I wasn't dare going to turn around.
Yeah.
Nothing. Closed down.
Ran into that
situation. I'm afraid the Elk City bus was in the same predicament as they were right in front of me. They turned in, and I went, boys, that dude is locked down.
I ran into the same situation, I guess it'd be a week ago tonight, coming back from Corn. You know, obviously there's not a lot of eating establishments in Corn, Oklahoma. But I came up 183, and I was like, you know, I just need a snack, just something to hold me over till I get home. And I come up to the first quick stop. You think a quick stop would be open? It was not. I needed gas, too. I mean, it wasn't that late. It was just after 9:30. Yeah, quick stops are usually at least 11 o'clock.
Oh! Okay.
From the text line, what do you got?
Take back everything I said.
They were open.
No, it's brand new. It's grand openings today. Because when I went by there, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's obviously open. Well, I guess they were kidding. Dylan found out the same way I did. Thinking, because I was like, man, this is perfect. You could just buzz out there. It's on the way. It's right there at the where the interstate goes above you, basically. Ah, well, there you go. No wonder.
Okay.
It looked nice.
Looked like a shiny penny
because
lights were on.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, because they haven't turned the lights on yet.
That makes total sense now, because the place looked packed when I went by there at like 5 or 4:45 or whatever time it was.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sorry. Sorry to Brahms.
I've been to, I guess we can
honestly, I didn't remember it there.
Yeah. Oh, I've been to R. Brahms after a football game.
Yeah, I always go to that. That's, you know, I always, when we're at Woodward, I go home the back way, you know, through Cheyenne and all that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it takes longer, but I just do it.
Just feels, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess I just want to run over deer on the Coolmobile is my idea. I don't understand why I do it. But anyway, but that Brahms there is on the very west side, mm-hmm. and it's always open. And it's always about where everybody goes. But anyway. All right, well, that makes a lot more sense.
Okay, well, then
I feel better about it.
You've issued the apology.
I have. The games last night, the Elkettes
finished. How'd they do?
They finished the regular season on a 4-game winning streak.
Hey.
End up 12-11, so above 500 as a season-long regular season record. They've really played pretty well for most of this stretch. You know, part of the reason why they've won 4 in a row is the competition hasn't been as strong as it was for the 5 before. Obviously, when you start stacking up Weatherford and Tuttle and a bunch of those teams in a row, that makes your schedule extremely to Bethany is another one of those. But they did what they should have done and needed to do over this last 4-game stretch of beating the teams that they're as good at, if not better than. And so kudos to Coach Ham and the gals. They started just a little slow last night. He called a timeout. And I think a lot of it was to avoid what happened on Friday, last Friday at Newcastle. The entire first half was just kind of a walkthrough almost. And then at halftime, I'm sure he did a little yelling and screaming in the locker room, and they came out and put 31 on the board against Newcastle in the second half to win 50-24. He just did that a lot earlier last night in the first couple minutes. The offense was turning the basketball over. Elgin got a three, it was 3-0, and called timeout, got everything kind of rectified, and the Elkettes played great. Haley Bowie had a season-high 18. She knocked down 4 threes. Ella Satilli, first time she's ever been to double figures in a varsity game as a freshman, she had 10, and following up her 8 from Friday night. And then DeLasia Martin as well, her senior year, her last two games have both been in double figures, a career-high 13 against Newcastle on Friday. She had 12 last night, and she's the one that really kind of has been the aggressor early on in these games, getting to the free throw line, getting herself in the paint. She's so quick that once she gets the step around you, it's just a matter of either fouling her or can she finish through contact for and ones at the rim. So, and of course, everything looks better when you knock down shots. Elk City made 8 threes in the girls' game. It just the things work better. You know, there's nothing worse than they're moving the ball around, getting a really good shot, and then it not going in over and over. You know, you can deal with it once or twice, but when it feels like there's a whole quarter worth of that, or even a whole half worth of that, it kind of gets you a little bit discouraged. But that didn't happen last night, as the Elkettes knocked down shots, played good defense, which they always do if they're able to set up. You know, the times where they give up a bunch of points is when the offense is the problem, turning it over, giving up buckets before you can get the defense back there set. Yeah. So, really on a high note going into the district game against Woodward on Friday. The boys just got off to a slow start. Jordan Wilson from Elgin lit them up in the first half. He had 18 first half points, knocked down 4 threes in the half. It seemed like in the second half, you know, they kind of climbing the mountain to get it back to a single digit game. Finally did. And got a stop down 8 with 4 minutes to go or so, and then just kind of unforced turnovers there for a couple of possessions. They continued to get stops, but they just weren't able to put enough offensive possessions together to get all the way back in. And Elgin's only scored like 6 points in the fourth quarter. Hmm. So defense wasn't the problem, get stop after stop after stop. But they just couldn't string enough offense together in a couple of just unforced turnovers, quite honestly. On some plays that they didn't need to make and trying to make and so weren't able to get back, and they lose 50-39. So the Elkettes end up 12-11 in the regular season. The Elks 9-13 on the year, and they both got Woodward coming to town. The Elkettes probably have the tougher of the two matchups between them and the Big Elks if you just look at what the records are from Woodward. The Woodward Lady Boomers is going to be a tough and a tough matchup for Elk City on the girls game, just because of the style they play has the ability to give the Elkettes fits. So if they can, you know, take care of the basketball and knock down a couple shots, I think it's going to be a great game. If not, then you know, things may go south if they can't take care of the ball, and that's the main key, is taking care of the basketball for the girls. On the boys side, I hadn't seen a ton of what Woodward has done. I know it's been a team in the past that's been pretty up tempo, shooting threes, getting, you know, spreading you out, driving it to the goal. But they do have a new coach this year, as Coach Williamson went to Garden City. So I'll have to do some more research and do some more prepping to tell you really a good idea of what the Boomers have got. But if you just look at records, you know, Woodward a couple games over 500 on the girls' side, and the boys kind of right there at 500, a couple below. So it seems like that ought to be pretty even matchups on Friday night here for the district tournament.
And the girls game to me is intriguing with Elk City coming in with that win streak. And I get it, the opponents aren't as, you know, they're not the quality that, you know, of the Tuttles and Weatherford's. But what I liked was 3 out of 4 were on the road. It's, I mean, that's saying something to me. You're going on the road, and maybe this gets them going a little bit. Now you come home with a lot of confidence to go up against a solid Woodward squad. I think it's a very winnable game. They just, yeah, you want to see everything work, especially the offense.
Yeah, Woodward 14-7 on the girls in the regular season. The boys were right at 500, 10-10. Just common opponents when you look around through the records. similar wins and similar losses, if you know what I mean. The one that stands out on a positive side for like the Elkettes is Blanchard beat Woodward by more than they beat Elk City. You know, one of those things. They both played Jones. Woodward played them much tougher than the Elkettes did, and Woodward beat Clinton, where Elk City fell to Clinton back early on in the season. But yeah, they're absolutely gonna want to play fast and get up and down the floor, three quarter court, half court traps, and that kind of stuff. So the number one thing Elk City has to do in the girls' game is take care of it.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, then they can't set the defense up, and the defense has been fantastic when they've been allowed, when they've not turned it over and set up defense. When they haven't, that's when the runaways start. That's going to be the biggest key of the night, is to take care of the basketball, for sure, for the Elkettes. Man, last night, how about the Thunder? And how about Josh Giddey? So OKC goes into MSG, the Madison Square Garden, and comes away with a 127-123 overtime win. Josh Giddey, I think he's like the fourth guy in the history of the league in his first appearance in MSG to have a triple-double. He became the youngest player in NBA history with triple-doubles in back-to-back games, and it's his eighth 10-assist game as a teenager, breaking a tie for third all-time with Luka Doncic, now only behind LeBron James, who has 11, and Stephon Marbury with 9. And so you're talking about heady stuff for the Thunder rookie Josh Giddey in the season that he's had. He's been the Western Conference Rookie of the Year every time they've given him out the award for November, December, January, and looks like probably a pretty decent chance that February might go his way as well. But it wasn't just him. It was also Trey Mann last night knocking down shots for the Thunder. Think about this. They won a game without Dort, without Shea, without Muscala, without Jeremiah Robinson Earl. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that at 2 o'clock our man Jim Traver is going to be mad about this win and saying it's a bad win. And I guess you can make the argument any win is a bad win when you're trying to do what the Thunder are trying to do, but I do think certain wins are better than others. And if they come because your two rookies dominated the fourth quarter in overtime, then those are ones that I think that you can kind of look and go, well, it's better than either the other team just playing terrible or, Dort and Shea winning a game for the Thunder.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder, you got these two guys, these two young studs, and they're obviously going to be some corner pieces moving forward. How, as a coach, do you say, guys, I know this is your first year in the league and we're in the mecca of basketball right here, but I don't want you to play good? You can't.
No, you can't.
You can't do that. And I'm okay with wins like this and still, I forgot about our favorite website, Tankathon, still right there in the mix for a high lottery pick. And I know it's not a deep draft, but I think what's encouraging to me is, I guess my question is, I know they're kind of pulling back the reins a little bit when it comes to production and winning, a little bit. But when it's, and that's the next big question is, when does Oklahoma City take that next step and start going for the wins as opposed to going for the losses and high draft picks? And when that happens, is it full on, okay, let them go, let them fly? And that's what's exciting to me, because we kind of saw a little preview of that last night with these two rookies. That's exciting if you're a Thunder fan. And then once SGA gets back, Dort gets back, and once they're allowed to play, does that make sense? That's my question is, are they being told, okay, hold back a little bit? Okay, oh, you twist your ankle? Let's let you rest for all the way to the end of February.
Now, that part, yes.
Yeah.
During the game, no. They're not literally being told, okay, don't make this shot.
Yeah, go 75%.
No, no, no.
But I do. It makes me wonder. Dagnon's in a tough spot because, his philosophy, is his philosophy changing? Like, golly, I coach to win. But the grand scheme of things is we want a high draft pick. And do we really want to go for this win? Does that go into his thought process when he's drawing up a play on the whiteboard?
I don't think so. I think it all just goes back to who is on the floor at what time.
Yeah.
And so that's the way that he can, quote unquote, tank without telling guys not to do their job is just to have the right guys on the floor at those times, which is, turns out, if you're trying to win, the wrong guys. It just didn't work last night.
Yeah.
Giddey and Trey Mann went nuts. Darius Baisley went nuts. I mean, you look at those guys, they combined for 81. And then, you know, Kenrich Williams off the bench. You know, he's a guy that everyone wanted to trade at the trade deadline because they thought, you know what, you can get something for him. Well, it turns out either they couldn't get what they wanted for him or they didn't have that in their mind because he is a winning player, mm-hmm. an absolute winning player. And so if the plan, which I think it is, when you're asking when are they going to start trying to win every game, I think that happens next year. Especially if they can get a little bit of luck in the lottery to where they can get one of those top three guys, Jabari Smith, Pablo Banchero, or Chet Holmgren. If they can come away with one of those three to put into the lineup with what they've got with Dort and SGA and Giddey already established, then guys like Williams all of a sudden become way more valuable off the bench because you're trying to win. And those are guys that you want to have there. So I think it happens next year unless they just get totally unlucky in either the lottery or totally unlucky with injuries come next year starting.
I think what will also be very telling is not so much where they are in the lottery, but this offseason you start seeing Presti make some moves for – some bigger name players.
Yeah, I don't think that happens yet. I think that's down the road.
Go with what we got now and then add pieces, say, next year's trade deadline.
Or the year after. Just
depending where they're at.
I think you're going to have to let this marinate and grow and see what you need. And that's the beauty of what Oklahoma City has coming up, especially if they can get a difference maker. And this is the whole point of the tank. Is to get into that position. I mean, listen, Giddey's fantastic. He has been fantastic. He's been better than anybody thought. But is he a generational type player? A franchise changing type player? Not yet. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't. He looks fantastic, sure. But is he one of those guys? And, you know, a Durant, like what we saw in the first iteration of the Thunder. Durant, Westbrook, Harden, those were guys that changed the entire complexion of the franchise. Giddey's good, but is he one of those? And, you know, who's to say that one of those top three are, but people think they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you want to get your shot at him. Me personally, what do you think? You've watched a little bit of all of them. If you could choose one right now, if it's a three-player draft, who would you take? If you had the number one pick.
Of this upcoming draft?
Yes.
I haven't watched a lot today. More than you. I mean, watched a lot of OU. I'd probably go with the guy from Gonzaga. No. The guy from Duke.
Banchero?
Yeah. Something tells me he's more pro-ready than the guy. Nothing against the guy from Gonzaga. I think they're all good. I think that's the guy I'd go for. How about you? Any idea?
Jabari Smith. Auburn. That's who I want.
Yeah. Those two to me, I don't know why nothing about the guy from Gonzaga impresses me. Help me with that.
Because he's a stick. Yeah. Chet Holmgren.
Yes.
He's a stick.
The other two look more pro ready.
Jabari Smith looks like he could be a phenomenal player. But
yeah.
Be a nice problem to have, but if Oklahoma City fourth from the bottom, only one game ahead of Indiana, and we all know Indiana's trying to tank with some trades they've made. So, Thunder right now fourth from the bottom, one game ahead of Indiana, then they're like three clear of Sacramento after that.
I keep sim lottery on Tankathon. I can't get above four.
Not good.
No.
All right, Super Bowl. Wrapping it up. Anything that you've kind of thought about from what we talked about yesterday to today that you've kind of not necessarily changed your mind on or anything, just something else that has popped up in your mind to think, hey, this is worth saying?
I think it's all been said. I mean, the big, I know we'll kind of jump into the who's to blame for Cincy and their loss, but, you know, and it's funny how everything ties into Oklahoma sports in general, but, you know, what should have been Mixon out there instead of P. Ryan, and that's a debate that'll go on forever in Cincinnati and the state of Ohio, but I just like that it was a good game and everything. I thought the stat that we didn't talk about, but I thought it was funny. The first OU player to throw a touchdown in Super Bowl history was a running back, Joe Mixon. Thought that's crazy, but I'm just glad it wasn't, honestly, I was glad it wasn't a blowout, you know, and I'm glad that, and we've gotten some really good Super Bowls in that regard the last few years. It has not been a lopsided blowout. It's been fun games and entertaining all the way to the end. So I just, you know, obviously wanted Cincinnati to win, but I question this model of how LA won the Super Bowl. I don't think it's sustainable as far as a dynasty is concerned, or winning two out of three, et cetera, something like that. You know, but that remains to be seen. It might be a new approach. It is kind of a new approach we haven't seen, where you go full on in, you win it. Well, now they got, I mean, the cupboard could be bare to start next year, and we get a lot of new names playing for the Rams. And that's why I think is odd is we're going to talk about Super Bowl favorites as they're up there. I just don't see it. For me, I mean, maybe it's because it's Stafford is more likely still going to be around, and that's the guy, but that can keep them up there as Super Bowl contenders. But the interesting thing for me is, and we'll talk about this, is how many other teams take that model and go, okay, let's do what LA did. It worked for them. But if they, and think about, you know, we talk about history, the what ifs. What if they'd lose that game? Like, golly, they went all in and lost. They even played in their home city. Don't do that again. So I mean, that's what's going to be interesting for me as the league moves forward. How do other teams follow suit in trying to win the ultimate prize?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great debate. As you'd put on our text line about, hey, you know, would you, you know, a homegrown quote unquote Super Bowl versus a bought one? You think anybody that's a Rams fan cares?
No.
And do you think anybody that's a Rams fan is even concerned about, well, we might not be the greatest for the next 3 years or so?
No, it's a win now. I mean, that's the world we live in, especially on the West Coast. And it's kind of why I go back to arguing how long Lincoln Riley will survive out there. It's a win now mentality. If you're not the champion, if you're not winning now, well, you're not important. And that's a West Coast kind of thing. And no, they don't care about it. Like right now, they're relishing in the fact that they've won a Super Bowl, and they don't, you know, they don't care. But they could be yesterday's news next this time next year because you guys didn't get back there.
But who cares? It doesn't have to just be LA. I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't give a damn as a Dallas Cowboys fan what happened 3 years later if the Cowboys could win another Super Bowl.
They won right now.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
We've gone through, what is this now, 27? We're going into year 28 of futility since the last. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I understand the idea of, you know, there's two separate trains of thought. And
but does it, it's awesome now, but in like 3 years after sub 500 seasons, maybe barely making the playoffs here and there and not having a deep playoff run, you look back and go, man, that was sure fun 3 years ago. Wish we could do that again.
3 years ago. 3 years ago. Instead of, boy, that was sure fun 28 years ago when I was just barely a teenager.
But does it put a black mark on the Super Bowl win is what I'm asking.
No, it doesn't. Because here, the difference between the NFL and most other sports is that this is the way the NFL is built. You know what I'm saying? We see it every year. Half the teams in the playoffs are different from the year before. And the way it's structured with salary caps and the draft and all that, it's designed for parity. And so even if you're down for a couple of years, it doesn't take that much time to get back. You know what I mean? If you do it right, you know, if you're smart enough to wait until that. To me, the beauty of what the Rams did, they've got a bunch of guys they drafted on that team, a bunch of them, but they waited until the exact right time to do this. You know what I'm saying? They waited until it was ready built, and then, okay, what do we need? Quarterback, boom, Stafford. Let's see, Robert Woods got hurt. Okay, OBJ, you can come. You know, and then what else? Oh, this ferocious pass rush just gets better with Vaughn. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's not like they built this team. They built it from the ground up, but then when it was time, and that's, to me, the smart part of what they did and a lot of what Tampa did last year. The smart part of it was, okay, it's time. Now let's make the move now. Instead of, you know, and I think that's the hard part, is knowing exactly when it's time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dallas is as bad as anybody of thinking it's time and spending all their money and it's not close to time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the Rams and the Bucks both back-to-back hit the nail right on the head when it was time. And so I don't know if this is like I think the crazy part of it is – when it was time, they went and got a quarterback. That's what I think is so different about these. Because normally, when your quarterback comes of age, that's when it gets to be time, you know, to try to bring in other guys around them. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you do that when the quarterback's young enough to where they're not making the bukus of money so you can. But these last 2 years have been totally different in that aspect because – everything was in place except the quarterback, and that's so different than what we thought for the last 25 years or 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, because I think maybe Brady, Peyton, those kind of guys spoiled people into thinking, hey, those just grow on trees.
Right.
Well, it turns out they don't.
No, it
seems like they have because those guys have been good for so long. But, maybe this becomes – a little bit more of the model, just because you can't always draft a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah. We'll have, again, wait and see. Let's see how the rest of the league responds to this.
Because a lot of times, if you have a quarterback, I can't wait to see how this works. And your wait and see is right, because do teams watch this, and do they become more hesitant? I'm not comparing these players and their abilities, but just where their contract status is. Does a team like the Browns become less likely, even if Mayfield has a pretty good year, to sign him to the big money because that team seems ready built to go? Or even in this offseason, do they punt on the young quarterback to bring in a guy to win now, and then we'll worry about the rest later? I mean, that's what the Rams did. Mm-hmm. They had everything set. And they went, okay, we're winning now. We'll worry about the rest later. Now, the problem for them is, like you said, they're in glitz and glamour L.A. How long does that honeymoon last, if they're just terrible? But for other franchises around the country, I mean, this makes not only the – I wonder if at some point, and I don't think it's going to happen just because of how important quarterback is, but I do wonder at some point if it doesn't devalue some of these guys in the draft just a little bit, because the thought is, well, there's no guarantee, no matter how good this guy is coming out of college, that he really is going to be our franchise savior. So what if we take a third-round guy, see if we hit a home run, and if not, go pluck somebody to fit right into our team when it's time to win the Super Bowl? I don't know. I don't think it's going to go that way. Just because quarterback is so important, and if you get a young one, you're set forever, or at least for a decade or so. And that's always going to be the standard and the goal, I think. But with what's happened these last couple years, it's almost a little bit like the quarterbacks are now entering the transfer portal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A little bit like that, where you're not quite as sure about the guy you drafted. And who has been pretty decent. I mean, unless it's Burrow or maybe Herbert, you know, that type of guy right now. Josh Allen, obviously, and Mahomes as the younger guys. But if it's not one of them, then you start kind of glancing, okay, how good is Matt Ryan still? How good is Jimmy G? You know, how can Russell Wilson still go? And I wonder if we don't start seeing some madness moves because teams take on this model of what's happened the last 2 years.
Now, the question is who? You know, who can be making them? You mentioned Cleveland. I could see Cleveland totally doing something like that.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Tennessee, Indianapolis, yeah. Pittsburgh maybe. Think about the Steelers.
Yeah, they're going to be in a need. And there is not – where they are in the draft, there won't be available or a good next quarter. Does that make sense? Like, well, a guy that you want to have on your – you know, as your quarterback moving forward for the next 10, 15 years. There's not that guy that's going to be there. What are they, in the 20s in the draft?
Yeah, like number 20, exactly.
Yeah.
And to me, this offseason especially is ready built for this because the quarterback crop doesn't seem that great.
No.
Coming out of college. And the possible free agency crop or the possible, you know, you can trade for NFL quarterbacks are Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? When you think about Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers dangling out there as possibilities, I think somebody's going to do something stupid. I mean real stupid. But is it real stupid? Because I think some people thought what the Rams did was pretty stupid. To give up two first, a second, a third, you know, for Matt Stafford.
Right.
And they won the Super Bowl. Nobody's calling that trade stupid right now. Because nobody cares in L.A. We won the Super Bowl. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how many younger quarterbacks – that have been pretty good, but you're not 100% sure are the ticket, become expendable for someone you think is. And that extends not only to Baker Mayfield, that may extend down south of here too,
well,
to Dak
then,
Prescott.
Yeah, but then that – so who is – we talk about the teams. Who's the quarterback that is – you mentioned Russell Wilson. Is he in a bad spot right now with Seattle if he was plugged into a Cleveland, Tennessee?
Colts. Dallas.
All of a sudden, are they the new L.A.?
Looks like it. In some
or,
of those
or
spots.
Does Russell Wilson have any more gas in the tank?
That's
it's like a chicken-egg thing in Seattle. It's like who's, I don't know, to blame, but – you know, has he lost all the star power around him and it's just him left? Or is his production gone down because, well, he's running out of gas?
That's what's so risky about it.
I know.
That's what's so risky about it.
That's why I thought it was risky to go all in to get Stafford. Because I thought, well, Stafford, he's been okay. I mean, he puts up some great numbers. But I guess it was just the fact that he was wearing a Lions jersey that was kind of – putting the blindfold on me, you know?
Like, sure.
Well, it's the Lions, though.
Oh.
Still can't win.
100%.
You know, and I just thought, well, it might be a lot of the same in L.A. Turns out he's a really good quarterback, and when you put pieces around him, they're pretty good.
Well, you know, he always had Calvin Johnson up there, and that was a great mm-hmm. connection, but what did it get you? It got you two playoff losses.
Right.
In 11 years.
Right.
Just two, by the way. But that's the risk. Do you get Tom Brady and Matt Stafford, or do you get Jimmy G or somebody, you know, somebody else like that?
Right.
And that's where I think drafting one and grooming him is still going to be the preferred method because you're comfortable with what you've got because you know what you've got. After, you know, especially at this point, what's Russell Wilson been in the league? Almost a decade? So I think they'll still draft him. But I also think there are going to be certain situations like this where a team is looking around going, we're literally a quarterback away. Let's go get one.
Yeah.
And it's going to become more prevalent, especially after the last 2 years. It's kind of exciting.
It is.
Who do you make the favorite next year? I gotta do a little show booking right quick.
Oh, good. Well, you're always going to start with Kansas City and the Bills as your two favorites. hard for me to see, like I said, LA being up there as a favorite. I'm kind of waiting to see. I'm kind of holding pattern on them. Yeah, Stafford will be back, but who else will be back? Will OBJ be back? I mean, everyone forgets he just tore an ACL. I mean, that how long is the recovery there? Can he be 100%? Let's see here. It's hard. I mean, the clear answer is Kansas City and Buffalo. That's what Vegas is going to tell you. But I really, you know, but then after that, I mean, that's like tier one is those two teams. And then after that, I just don't know until we see how the draft goes, you know, off-season acquisitions, free agent signings, stuff like that. And then we'll see. So that's my answer. I mean, it's kind of an obvious answer is those two teams right there.
Those are the two favored, Kansas City and Buffalo, 7-1. The Rams and Dallas next at 12-1. Green Bay 13-1. San Francisco 15-1. Cincinnati, Baltimore at 21-1. Then Denver at 22-1. That's only one reason. It's people they're protecting themselves from Aaron Rodgers going there, right? Because otherwise, Denver's nowhere near the 8th favorite. But you also can't have them at 50-1. Somebody knows Rodgers going there, bam. Now you're in trouble from a liability standpoint if you're the sports books. Kansas City, Buffalo have to be the favorites in my mind.
They just seem more solid and there's not a lot of questions.
Right now with the questions that are out there, they have a couple. They don't have as many. Dallas has all kinds of guys that they either will or won't sign. The Rams, like you've talked about, with what they could or couldn't do. Is Aaron Donald going to retire? I mean, there's so much of that out there that we just don't know. And so I'd be hard-pressed right now to bet on the Rams at 12-1.
There's even talk of their young 30-something-year-old coach retiring.
Yeah, there's lots there. You understand why they're there, because it's L.A., because they just won and all that. But that's one of those. Okay, who can be the Bengals next year? The Bengals of this year, who could that be? A team that didn't – I'm not talking about a playoff team. I'm talking about somebody that didn't make the playoffs.
The Colts.
I was going to say Baltimore, just because Baltimore seems unfair because they've been good and they didn't make the playoffs. I agree with Colts. Those aren't really Bengals. Those are just teams that didn't make the playoffs. But that's what was so special about this season for the Bengals. No one, I can't imagine, outside of the most loyal Cincinnati Bengal fan, how many to win the Super Bowl tickets were out there from 125-1 at the first of the season or whatever it was. There couldn't have been a ton because nobody saw it coming. So if you think about teams.
Yeah, you can see the Colts making a run. If they get solid quarterback play,
they can
make a run.
Sure.
Same thing with Baltimore.
Here's one. And this has nothing to do with anything but a guy getting to play football that didn't last year.
Who's that?
What about Houston if Deshaun Watson plays?
That's interesting. That is interesting.
I mean, because you just don't – I tell you what, maybe for next year, I've got one picked out for the next year, 2024, because I love who they hired as a coach.
That'd be?
Jacksonville.
Oh, wow.
Hired Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
Working with Trevor Lawrence. This is this year's way too early for that.
Yeah.
But this time next year, see what the results are. But maybe Jacksonville. Doug Peterson's a good
coach. I'm not ready to dive in there yet. I'm not. It's Jacksonville.
Programming note, tomorrow morning, 9:15, Lance Carpenter of the Leedy Bison will be joining us to talk about Leedy basketball heading into the regional tournament coming up on Thursday. Indiahoma will be their opponent there at Hammond in the regional tournament, 8 o'clock on Thursday. So we'll talk to Coach Carpenter about his season and how the Bison have progressed as they've moved along this year. It's always fun to talk to Lance and get his thoughts on Leedy basketball. So we'll do that 9:15 in the morning, have Coach Carpenter on with us from Leedy. Okay, Jared, this has been a hot-button issue on my Facebook feed.
Oh, really?
It has been. And the topic is, was what happened in Phoenix on Saturday fun or madness? If you don't know, Sam Ryan, well, first off, if you don't know, the Phoenix Open is largely known as the party tournament. Arizona State, every year when they come out with the party school rankings, Arizona State is at or near the top of every one of those lists every single year. Phoenix has the Phoenix Open has embraced that stigmatism. They've built the stadium hole on number 16, the par 3, and it's got 25 or 30,000 people, just like it's in a it's in a stadium on the golf course. Yeah. And there's multiple tents everywhere throughout out there at TPC Scottsdale, but that hole is known as the party hole. Everyone remembers a young Tiger Woods before the stadium effect was there, but on that hole in 1997, cashing in an ace, beers flying all over the place. Okay, so that's and it's embraced out there in Phoenix. So yeah. Sam Ryder knocks one in on Saturday for an ace, the first time it had happened in maybe a decade or so since Francesco Molinari knocked one in. And people go nuts, and beer cans start flying onto the green, onto the surroundings of the green, and golf purists, I would say, went crazy, and how disrespectful it was to the game, to the course, and all that. And people on the other side were basically, I had the opinion of, that's why golf won't grow, because you people won't let it be fun. What say you, Jared?
Well, I feel like I'm in a trap here. I know you're more of a golfer than I am. I, for one, thought it was a hoot. It's not like this everywhere. If it was like this everywhere, every time there was an ace, this happened, I'd have a problem with it. Because this is so unique. You got, and the players embrace that for this one hole of the entire tour. This one hole, they go up there and they're waving the fans on, like kind of Happy Gilmore-ish. Like, hey, let's go, make some noise. And if their shot's a little to the left, a little to the right, not on the green, they get the boos and they embrace that too. So they embrace this and they think, man, I want to be the guy that creates a beer shower here. I think it's fun. I think it's fun for it's just one of those unique things for the sport. Like, oh, that's the tournament, the WM, the Phoenix Open. That's where that happens. And to see that many people, they line up at, what, 2, 3, 4 in the morning to run for one of those seats, that shows how popular golf is. And I think I have no problem with the PGA and the organizers at the WM for putting this on. I got no problem with it. I'd have a problem with it, like I said, if it was every time, everywhere, there was a hole-in-one, people went crazy like this. You know what I mean? But because this is the one place that they can do it, I think it's great. Zero problem with it.
I am definitely one of the, you know, I love the stodginess of what the Masters does in golf. I love the exclusivity of it. The aura of it, the act right of it, all of that I love at the Masters. But I love it at the Masters. And I think you say two things that are right on the money for me. One, it's one hole, one time a year.
Right.
This isn't happening everywhere.
No one's trying to mimic it.
No one's mimicking because it can't be mimicked.
No.
And it has that reputation, and the players know it has that reputation. And number two, the players have bought into it.
Yeah.
It would be one thing if you looked up and the field was missing the top guys, right?
Right.
It's not missing the top guys.
No.
They have, and I think there's some jealousy of Sam Ryder right now because he's the one that lit that fuse with the ace. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that those guys, I mean, it's a constant grind out there, and it's a crazy environment. But they know it going in, and Phoenix, they've been able to accept it and kind of embrace it. And it happens. I don't think it's any it's not a coincidence that you know when that tournament is played every year?
Super Bowl weekend.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's like one of the biggest party weekends of the year.
That's right. And you have to have something to compete from a television standpoint with Super Bowl hype on Sunday especially. And guess what? It's become kind of a tradition for people to watch the Phoenix Open end that are tired of the hype for 2 weeks worth of build up for the Super Bowl. Hey, let's watch Phoenix, see how that ends, and we'll get right to the we'll time the national anthem as we turn the channel.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Phoenix Open went to a playoff, and we turned to what we
That's a bad break for the Phoenix Open.
Right, what hole did they start the playoff on? They just start go 18. Back in 18. Yeah. It'd be funny if they go back to 16.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean.
It would be.
Imagine an ace to win the damn thing, and the stands would explode.
Oh, dude. I can't even imagine. I had a question. Compare that to 17 at TPC Sawgrass.
Okay, is that next?
It's in May.
Oh, okay.
They've moved
I've
it.
Seen
it
them
used to be. In, yeah,
a
they've been. Oh, trust me, they've been building that thing up. It's on Mother's Day weekend. Is always that now?
Okay.
Since they've changed.
Okay.
No. Wait a minute. That's not right. Because the PGA's in May. They moved it back to March. Yeah, it's a couple weeks.
So I thought, because
it's like mid-March, where it used
to be. I see them, you know, and you hear the Stevie Nicks song.
Yeah,
and
that's
everything.
Right.
I thought, man, they're really advertising that one early.
Yeah, they totally changed the calendar with the PGA moving to May.
Okay.
So, yeah, it is in March. It's probably a month away. Couple of weeks before the Masters. Masters is April what?
March 10th.
March 10th. So exactly a month.
13th.
So a month before the Masters.
Yeah.
Similar, because it's a TPC course, and they built those TPC courses with stadium effects. Now, it's natural at Sawgrass, but there's gobs and gobs of people, and we've seen in the past, you know, jumping into the water and when something crazy happens, you know, it doesn't happen near as often. But the whole aura around the Players Championship is different to me than what the Phoenix Open is. You know, that's like the quote unquote fifth major at Sawgrass, whereas it's just. It's a party, and that's what it's designed to be, and that's what it's always going to be. And so there's no putting the toothpaste back in the bottle,
right,
is what I'm saying. And so it's either are we just going to gripe about it every year, or are we just going to accept it, move on, this is the way it's going to be. And like you said, thankfully for the golf purist, which I still am, but it's only one time a year, and it's only one hole a year
exactly.
That this has the potential to happen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen every year. It happens once a decade, it seems like. Now, this year it happened twice. Back-to-back days,
crazy.
Which is an anomaly. But,
yeah.
I mean,
even the fans, as crazy as they look, they're respectful. They're not throwing beer cans for a birdie. You know, they know, okay, this goes in. If it's an ace, we go crazy. That's the rule.
There were two pro golfers shirtless on the green after pars on Sunday. That tells you how much they embrace
yeah.
it. Everybody have a great day. Lance Carpenter tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.